So today we come to the third tetrad. The third tetrad has to do with consciousness. So experiencing of the manner of consciousness. Must be understood to be through four jhanas, because consciousness is concomitant with all four jhanas. And here, I don't know where he got the words manner of. I don't find in the sub-commentary, and we don't need to say experiencing the manner of consciousness. Experiencing the consciousness, that means clearly seeing the consciousness. So I would leave the words manner of. And the next is gladdening the consciousness. He trains thus, making the mind glad, instilling gladness into it, cheering it, rejoicing it. I shall breathe in, I shall breathe out. Herein, there is gladdening in two ways, through concentration and through insight. So through samatha and through vipassana. Now through concentration, he attains the two jhanas in which happiness or piti is present. Two jhanas means what? According to fourfold method, the first and the second. According to fivefold method, first, second and third. But mostly the fourfold method is used in the book, so it says two jhanas. So the first and the second according to fourfold method. At the time when he has actually entered upon them, he inspires the mind with gladness, instills gladness into it by means of the happiness associated with the jhana. So when he is in the first jhana or second jhana, there is piti arising together with jhana. So when there is piti or happiness, his mind is gladdened. So he experienced that. At the moment of jhana attainment or jhana consciousness. And through insight, after entering upon and emerging from one of the two jhanas accompanied by happiness, he comprehends with insight that happiness associated with the jhana as liable to destruction and liable to fall. Thus, at the actual time of insight, he inspires the mind with gladness, instills gladness into it by making the happiness associated with the jhana the object. Now in vipassana, this person has attained jhana before. So he enters into jhana first and then emerges from the jhana and then contemplates on the piti associated with jhana, contemplates on piti as liable to destruction, as liable to fall. Because if you practice vipassana, you must see the impermanence, suffering and soulless nature of things. So here he contemplates on piti as liable to fall, liable to destruction.
But is piti vedana or not?
Oh, piti is not vedana.
This is actual piti.
No, this is actual piti, okay. Yes. It is of one progressing in this way that the words he trains thus and so on are said. So in this method, the meditator enters into jhana first, emerges from the jhana, and contemplates on piti associated with jhana as liable to destruction and so on. And he inspires his mind, he gladdens his mind thus. The next one is concentrating the consciousness. And concentrating means evenly placing the mind. The Pali word samadhan. Samadhan. So sam means sama, evenly. And adhan means putting or placing. So samadha in the Pali word means evenly placing. It is a synonym for samadhi. So samadhi is that mental state which keeps the mind evenly on the object. That is, collected, not scattered, not only the mind, but other concomitants. So mind and other concomitants collectedly on the object and not being distracted. This is a function of samadhi. So evenly placing the mind, evenly putting it on its object by means of the first jhana and so on. Since it is here, samadhi is mentioned, we take any jhana, because any jhana, there is samadhi in any jhana. The first jhana has how many factors? 5 factors. And the fifth one is what? Ekagra. One-pointedness of mind or unification of mind, which is a synonym for samadhi. So samadhi is present in a very strong form, is present with all the jhanas. The first jhana, second, third, fourth. Or alternatively, when having entered upon those jhanas and emerged from them, he comprehends with insight the consciousness associated with jhana as liable to destruction and to fall. Here he enters into jhana and then emerges from the jhana and concentrates on the jhana consciousness. Now, you know what jhana is. Technically speaking, jhana means the collection of 5 factors, 5, 4, 3, 2 factors. And jhana consciousness is consciousness accompanied by jhana. And then there are other concomitants arising together with jhana or with the consciousness. So here, the meditator takes the consciousness as object of vipassana. In the previous method, he takes piti as the object of vipassana. So here he takes consciousness as object of vipassana. And at the actual time of insight, momentary unification of the mind arises. Now this is important here, momentary unification. In Pali it is called khanika samadhi. I think you should be familiar with that word, Pali word, khanika samadhi. So many people now are familiar with that word. Khanika means lasting for a moment. Khana means a moment. And samadhi means samadhi. So khanika samadhi, momentary concentration, or momentary unification of mind. And it is explained in the sub-commentary, and the translation is given in the footnotes. What is needed in vipassana meditation is this samadhi, momentary samadhi. You know, there are 2 kinds of samadhi, and they are mentioned at the beginning of the chapter on samadhi, I think the 3rd chapter. Neighborhood samadhi or excess samadhi, that is 1, and absorption samadhi, that is 2. So there are 2 kinds of samadhi, neighborhood samadhi and absorption samadhi. So when you practice samatha meditation, first you get the neighborhood concentration, and then from neighborhood concentration you progress to jhana concentration. In vipassana there can be no neighborhood concentration, because neighborhood implies there is jhana. Whose neighbor? It is a neighbor of jhana. But in vipassana there is no jhana. So there can be no neighborhood concentration or excess concentration in vipassana. But instead of the neighborhood concentration, there is this momentary concentration. And this is as good as the neighborhood concentration. Now, concentration lasting only for a moment, that is the what meaning of momentary concentration. For that too, when it occurs uninterruptedly on its object in a single mode and is not overcome by opposition, fixes the mind immovably as if in absorption. So the momentary concentration can keep the mind on the object and not let it be distracted. So that is what we call momentary concentration. And when a person practices vipassana, a time in the beginning, he may have many wanderings of mind, say mind going out here and there, and he has to bring it back to the main object again and again. And then a time will come with practice when these wanderings become less frequently, until they may not come at all, or the mind will not be distracted at all, or even when there is distraction, the meditator can catch it right away. He will not be carried away by the wanderings or thoughts, let's say for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, and so on. So that is a time when a meditator is said to have gained the momentary concentration. That means your mind is on the main object for a long time, and even though there is a wandering of mind, you are able to catch it. You are able to be mindful of it as soon as it goes out. Sometimes you will be able to stop it before it goes out. The moment it is about to go out, you are aware. So you can stop it before it goes out. So such a time is called a time when a person has reached the momentary concentration. So this momentary concentration is important in vipassana meditation, and it is a counterpart of excess or neighborhood concentration in samatha meditation. So with that concentration, mind is concentrated. So it arises through the penetration of the characteristics of impermanence and so on. So mind is on the mind and matter and its impermanence, impermanent nature and others. The next one is liberating the consciousness, freeing the consciousness. So liberation here can mean different things with different jhanas. So since it has to do with jhana, jhanas are mentioned here. So the first jhana liberates mind from what? From what? From hindrances. Yeah. So the first jhana liberates mind from hindrances. So long as there are hindrances in your mind, you cannot get first jhana. So first jhana frees your mind from mental hindrances. Then the second jhana frees your mind from what? Initial application and sustained application. And then the third jhana from piti and so on. Or alternatively, when having entered upon those jhanas and emerged from them, he comprehends with insight the consciousness associated with the jhana as liable to destruction and to fall. So here, first he enters into jhanas and emerges from jhanas, and then comprehends the consciousness associated with the jhana as liable to destruction and so on. And then at the actual time of insight, he liberates the mind from the perception of permanence by means of the contemplation of impermanence. If he contemplates on impermanence, then he liberates mind from the conception of permanence. From the perception of pleasure by means of contemplation on pain, if he contemplates on dukkha, then he will be able to free his mind from the perception of sukha. From the perception of self by means of contemplation of not self, if he contemplates on not self, then he will be able to get rid of the perception of self. From delight, by means of the contemplation of dispassion. So when you contemplate on dispassion, then the light will be gotten rid of. From greed, by means of contemplation of fading away. Fading away really means vimagga. And from arousing by means of the contemplation of cessation. So when you contemplate on cessation, you do not arouse anything, you do not cause anything to arise. And from grasping by means of the contemplation of relinquishment. So when you contemplate on relinquishment, then you abandon grasping. So these are those liberated by different stages of vipassana meditation. So this method also pertains to both samatha and vipassana. So this tetrad should be understood to deal with contemplation of mind. The first is what? Experiencing or making clear the mind, consciousness. The second is gladdening consciousness. The third is concentrating the consciousness. And the fourth is liberating the consciousness. So this tetrad has to do with contemplation of mind, the third of the four foundations of mindfulness. Now, I told you once, whenever I come to the small print, I'm afraid to read this. You know, the sub commentaries are actually more difficult than the commentaries. And the Nyanamoli used sub commentary for his explanations here, and sometimes he misunderstood some word, or sometimes the whole sentence. So here, let me see, at the time of contemplation of dissolution. For dissolution is the farthest extreme of impermanence. So at the time of actual insight means at the time of contemplation on dissolution. Contemplation on dissolution comes a little later in vipassana. The first knowledge you gain in vipassana is defining mind and matter. The first, after getting the momentary concentration, that you come to see mind and matter clearly, and then you see the relationship between mind and matter, or between what makes note and what is noted as cause and effect. And then you come to see the impermanence of things, impermanence. And then the next stage is seeing the arising and disappearing, or dissolution. The next stage after that is seeing dissolution. So first you see arising and dissolution clearly, and later on you see the dissolution more clearly, or dissolution becomes more prominent than the arising. So that is the statement here. The actual time of insight means at the time of contemplation of dissolution. For dissolution is the farthest extreme of impermanence. It is the highest stage in impermanence, because after dissolution there will be nothing. So arising and then going towards dissolution and dissolution itself, they are three phases of existence. So after the dissolution, the thing is gone. So dissolution is the farthest extreme of impermanence. When you see dissolution, you will not fail to see impermanence. So the meditator who is contemplating dissolution by its means sees under the heading of consciousness again. He is watching consciousness, but he sees the whole field of formation as impermanent. That means the whole field, the whole range of formations as impermanent, not as permanent, and so on. Here, formation means everything in the world. When we say karma formations, we mean karma, a volition. But when we say formations, we mean everything in the world, anything which is formed or which is conditioned is called formation here. Yet the Pali word is sankhara. The literal meaning of sankhara is made by causes or produced by causes. And then on the next page, footnote is, it is said this contemplation of impermanence, etc., is called relinquishment, as giving up, and relinquishment as entering into, because it gives up defilements along with aggregate producing karma formations, and because by seeing the flaws in what is formed and by inclining towards the opposite of what is formed, opposite of what is formed means nibbana, so namely nibbana, it enters into that nibbana. Consequently, the meditator who has that contemplation gives up defilements and enters into nibbana in the way stated. That is, relinquishment will be treated later. Yeah. There are two kinds of relinquishment. Yeah, we will come to that later. Now, herein, the contemplation of what is impermanent, as only impermanent is contemplation of impermanence. Do you see that sentence? In the footnote, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 line on page 313. Herein, the contemplation of what is impermanent, as only impermanent, is contemplation of impermanence. There's something wrong here. The contemplation of impermanence is explained in two ways in the sub-commentary. Contemplation of what is impermanent is contemplation of impermanence. And contemplation something as impermanent is also called contemplation of impermanence. The Pali word is, let us say, impermanent contemplation. To follow the sequence in Pali. So, impermanent contemplation means contemplation of what is impermanent, and contemplation on something as impermanent. In fact, they mean the same thing, but it is how words are explained in the commentaries. And then, this is a name for insight that occurs by taking formation of the three mundane planes and leaving aside the supramundane as impermanent. So, vipassana meditation never takes supramundane as object, or it cannot take supramundane as object, because vipassana must see the impermanent nature and others of things, and so it can take only mundane things as object. From the perception of permanence, from the wrong perception that occurs perceiving formed things as permanent, eternal. Also, the various views, here I will have to correct something. Also, consciousness and wrong views, we will strike out the words the and various. Also, consciousness and wrong views should be regarded as included under the heading of perception. Now, in the commentary it is stated that from the perception of permanence, but from the perception of permanence really means from the perception, from the consciousness, from the wrong views of permanence. So the other two are included under the heading of perception. Likewise with the perception of pleasure and so on. By means of the contemplation of dispassion, by means of the contemplation that occurs in the mode of dispassion for formation and so on. So others are not difficult to understand. So now let us go to the last tetrad, paragraph 234. Here, contemplating impermanence. So with in connection with this this phrase, the author gives us what is it that is impermanent, and what is impermanence, and what is the contemplation of impermanence, and what is the one who contemplates impermanence. There are four things differentiated here. The first is the impermanent. What is it that is impermanent? The answer is five aggregates. The five aggregates are those that are impermanent because their essence is rise and fall and change. Their essence or their nature is to rise, to fall, and to change. Impermanence is the rise and fall and change in those same aggregates. Why do we say that this the aggregates are impermanent? Because these aggregates arise, disappear, and they change. So rising, disappearing, and change is something by which we know that they are impermanent. That is why they are called impermanence here, the rise and fall and change. Or it is their non-existent after having been. That means disappearing after coming into being. So everything comes into being and then disappears. The meaning is it is a breakup of produced aggregates through their momentary dissolution, since they do not remain in the same mode. Now, I am a little concerned about the word momentary. I looked it up in the dictionary, and it has at least two meanings. First one is momentary means just for a moment. And the other meaning is at every moment, or moment to moment. Mm-hmm. So here, moment to moment is meant. But when we say momentary unification of mind, we mean a short time. So there is difference between the word momentary used in one sentence and in another sentence. So in the expression momentary unification of mind, we mean lasting only for a moment. But here momentary dissolution means moment to moment dissolution, dissolving at every moment. Contemplation of impermanence is contemplation of materiality, etc., as impermanent in virtue of that impermanence. One contemplating impermanence possesses that contemplation. So it is when one such as this is breathing in and breathing out that it can be understood of him. He trains that, I shall breathe in, I shall breathe out, contemplating impermanence. So the person is the one who is who possesses contemplation of impermanence. So impermanence, contemplation of impermanence, and the one who possesses contemplation of impermanence. So four things are differentiated here. Now, footnote. What is called permanent is what is lasting, eternal, like Nibbana. What is called impermanent is what is not permanent and is possessed of rise and fall. He said, the five aggregates are the impermanent, signifying that they are formed Dhamma as to meaning. Now, formed Dhammas as to reality, not meaning. According to reality, they are formed Dhammas, they are conditioned Dhammas. The Pali word atta, A-T-T-H-A, has many meanings. The obvious meaning of it is meaning. So meaning of a word is called atta. But it has other meanings too, like substance, or reality, or the thing. So here, the Pali word atta means in reality. So they are formed dhammas as to reality or in reality, not as to meaning. Why? Because their essence is rise and fall and change. The meaning is that their individual essence of rise and fall and change. They are informed dhammas arising owing to cause and conditioning. They are coming to be after non-existence. They are acquisition of an individual self. Individual self means just something like identity. Not the self with a capital S. Individual self is rise. They are moment-to-moment cessation when arisen is fall. Their changedness due to aging is changed. These are the explanation of the words. For just as when the occasion of arising dissolves and the occasion of dissolution succeeds it, there is no break in the object. So also there is no break in the object on the occasion facing dissolution. That means going towards dissolution. That means the middle phase of existence. In other words, presence, which is what the term of common usage aging refers to. Do you understand this?
Mm-hmm.
You don't? What is break in the object? You misunderstood one word, and then you don't understand the whole sentence. The Pali word, beda, B-H-E-D-A, he misunderstood this word. Beda can mean dissolution or break. And it can mean difference. So what is meant here is difference. Difference in the thing. Now, there are three sub-moments for one we call one big moment. The arising and going towards dissolution and dissolution. So three moments. During these three moments, the one Dhamma is said to be existing. So the third moment, which is different from the first moment. So at the third moment, which is different from the first moment, there is no difference of the thing. The thing is still existing, because a given thing, a given unit of Dhamma must exist at these three moments. So at the first moment or at the third moment, the thing is the same. There is no difference of the thing. In the same way, there is no difference of the thing at the middle stage. So this is what the sub-commentary is telling us. Just as when the occasion of arising dissolves and the occasion of dissolution succeeds, there is no break in the object. No. So, just as at the dissolution moment, which is different from the arising moment, there is no difference of the thing. So also, there is no difference at the moment of aging or at the moment of presence, at the middle moment. So it is proper that the aging of a single Dhamma is meant, which is called momentary aging. And without any reservation, there must be no break, and there must be no difference in the object between the occasions of arising and dissolution. Otherwise, it follows that one thing arises and another dissolves. So one thing exists for three moments. And so the third moment is different from the first moment. And the second movement is also different from the first movement and the third movement. Although the movements are different, the thing is the same, because it is existing for these three sub-movements. So there should be no difference of object between the moments of arising, aging, and disappearing. This is what is what the sub-commentary is telling us.
So this is a theoretical construct about how you analyze moments.
Yes, and how we explain momentary or moment-to-moment dissolution. According to the Abhidhamma, that which has these three moments of existence is real. Otherwise, it is not real. So concepts are said not to possess these three features of existence. We do not know when they come into being and when they are dissolved. So they have no essence of their own, no existence of their own. The concepts exist only in our minds and not in reality. So what is real, according to Abhidhamma, is that which has these three phases of existence. That is why consciousness is real, mental states are real, material properties are real, Nirvana is real. Nirvana is real, but it has no beginning and no end. So it is different from the other three. Okay. Now, the next method is on page 235, contemplating fading away. Now, there are two kinds of fading away. That is, fading away as destruction and absolute fading away. What is fading away as destruction? Hearing. Fading away as destruction is the momentary dissolution of formations. So moment-to-moment dissolution of formations is called fading away as destruction or dissolution. Absolute fading away is Nibbana. Contemplation of fading away is insight, and it is the path. So both insight and path are meant here, which occur as the seeing of these two. It is when he possesses this twofold contemplation and so on. So contemplation on fading away can be at the vipassana moment as well as at the path moment. The next one, the same method of explanation applies to the clause contemplating cessation. So cessation and fading away are used synonymously. The next is contemplating relinquishment. Relinquishment is of two kinds too, that is to say, relinquishment as giving up and relinquishment as entering into. So this word has two meanings, giving up and entering into. Relinquishment itself as contemplation is contemplation of relinquishment. This is a word explanation. For insight is called both relinquishment as giving up and relinquishment as entering into. Since first, through substitution of opposite qualities, it gives up defilements. Now here a little inaccuracy. It gives up defilements together with resultant aggregates and the aggregate producing karma formations. There are three things: defilements, resultant aggregates, and aggregate producing karma. These three things are abandoned, relinquished. So And it is through substitution of opposite. Sometimes people want to be literal when translating, and that makes it a little difficult to understand. Through substitution of opposite qualities simply means momentary abandonment. At this moment, you don't have attachment in your mind, or you don't have anger in your mind. That is, you are substituting wholesome states, unwholesome states with wholesome states. And so long as the wholesome states are in your mind, there will be no unwholesome states. And so this kind of abandonment is called substitution of opposites. So in fact, it is what we call, or what is popularly known as, momentary abandonment. There are three kinds of abandonment: momentary, temporary, and absolute. Temporary abandonment comes when we get jhanas. By jhanas, the mental defilements can be put away for some time. So their abandonment remains longer than the momentary abandonment. But since by jhanas, since the jhanas cannot abandon them absolutely or altogether, they may come back when there are conditions for them. So the third kind of abandonment is abandonment at the moment of enlightenment, at the moment of magga. So that is total destruction, not to come back again. So now here the first one is meant through substitution of opposite qualities. Now we say vipassana abandons mental defilements, and vipassana abandons mental defilements by the first way, just momentary abandonment. So firstly, through substitution of opposite qualities, it gives up defilements together with the resultant aggregates and the aggregate producing karma formations. And secondly, through seeing the wretchedness of what is formed, it also enters into nibbana by inclining towards nibbana, which is the opposite of the formed. Now, vipassana is here called giving up and entering into, let's say. So giving up means giving up, momentarily giving up defilements, their resultant aggregates, and then aggregate forming karma formations. And then it is said to incline towards, it is said to enter into nibbana. But you know, vipassana cannot take nibbana as object, right? Vipassana takes formations as object. So here, what we are to understand is, through seeing the wretchedness of what is formed, actually vipassana sees the wretchedness of the formations. It also enters into nibbana by inclining towards nibbana. So when you see the wretchedness of the formations, you want to get rid of them and go to the other thing, which is not formed, which is no wretchedness of any kind. So it is said to enter into nibbana, but not actually, because vipassana cannot take nibbana as object. Also, the path is called both relinquishment as giving up and relinquishment as entering into, since it gives up defilements with the aggregate producing karma formation, the same thing, by cutting them off. That means by abandoning them altogether. And it enters into nibbana by making it its object. So when mega consciousness arises, it takes nibbana as object. So the path of mega is both is called both giving up and entering into. Also, both insight and path knowledge are called contemplation because of their re-seeing successively. Anupassana, contemplation means, anu means again and again. Passana means seeing, so seeing again and again and again. Each preceding kind of knowledge. It is when he possesses the same thing. Now, so we come to the end of the fourth tetrad. And this fourth tetrad deals only with pure insight, while the previous three deal with serenity and insight.
In many Chinese meditation texts, particularly Zen, early Zen meditation texts, instead they have a slightly different way of this. They call stopping and seeing. Stopping. Now,